time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
All-time coaching gaffe. I'm sorry. Egregious. Marcus Freeman may be a likable guy. 10 for two plays. And then he says, we knew about it. We didn't want to take a penalty.
Russ Dellinger.
Now, you do occasionally, you know, hear coaches say, oh, I don't read social media. I don't look at social media. Here's the thing. They look at social media. They read social media, and they listen.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You want a school that's got some grievances? A Washington State has, and Oregon State. They've got some legit grievances. If you want to set up your enemy's table, Lee Corso isn't at the table, man.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ. Everybody is angry.
At Ryan, old men.
Old men, young. Ryan Day is angry at Lou Holtz. Notre Dame fans are angry at Marcus Freeman because he can't count to 11, or he can and didn't seem to mind.
Yeah.
William Christopher Sweeney was angry at his defensive coordinator for a half, but then they lost anyway. Clemson fans have to be angry. Their team is sliding. Someone ought to be angry at Lane Kiffin for talking so much junk. And, yeah, another Ole Miss show up.
Doing what they do.
Jake Dickert, the Washington State coach, is angry with Lee Corso. Kirk Herbstreit is angry at Ryan Leaf, who is angry at Kirk Herbstreit because they were defending their guys. Dan Lanning is angry at any program that seeks frivolous attention, like maybe having 50 uniform combinations. Lots of people are angry at Colorado, or at least happy that they finally lost. Travis Kelce is not angry at Taylor Swift. There was a debate online on how I would slip that in. Cincinnati alum. How would I slip that in? It's done. That's the last.
Got it done.
Last we'll discuss of that. Pat, you were at the Notre Dame Ohio State. Let's start with the angry there. Ohio, it's Ohio against the world and always has been. So great. Ryan Day was really angry after the game. Let's start with this. Great victory for Ohio State. It was a very, very good. It was a very tough football game. Every inch at Notre Dame Stadium was fought over. It was, not surprisingly, came down to the last play, or what should have been the last play, and then they wouldn't have kicked the extra point, and I would have won my race of the case bet. But hard-fought game. Look, it's just, Ohio State outgutted Notre Dame at the end. You win the game, you get the spoils. I think there's a lot of Ohio State fans still pretty concerned about this team, but they won the game. Better than losing. Better that for Ohio State, for Notre Dame. Just as you discussed the game, what were your thoughts on particularly the end of this game and how it all went down, Pat?
Well, let me first say, yes, the entire sport has lost its freaking mind. It's unbelievable the amount of trash talk, diva moments, melodramatic overreactions. I think this is the prime effect on college football. It's like, hey, we're just going full WWE here, baby. We're letting it all hang out. We're going to air all our grievances that we usually keep in the locker room. Now it's all public insults. And, oh, my, I can't believe they said this. Somebody said it. Whoever said it. And we are going to turn it into a federal case. And so there are federal cases all over the land. It's fabulously entertaining. It's highly bizarre, but it's really entertaining. So the deal, at Ohio State, Notre Dame, like, that was as dramatic an ending as you can get. You're on the 1 yard line on the last play. Can you get in or not? And they do. And Ohio State goes crazy, and they finish this do-or-die 65-yard drive, and that's the story until Ryan Day goes off on 86-year-old Lou Holtz, as if what Lou Holtz has to say still matters, and basically just declares war on Lou because Lou doesn't think they're very physical under Ryan Day. And turns it into this long screed on live TV and then repeats it all and then some in the postgame press conference. And it's like, holy moly, Ryan, take a chill pill. You just won a great game here. Is this really where we're going with that? And, you know, the whole thing, yes, it's Ohio against the world. It always has been. Poor little Ohio State, richest athletic program in America. Don't know how they're holding up against this onslaught of haters. But the thing is, it wasn't Ohio against the world. It was Ohio against 10 guys on the field. And that was Notre Dame's massive, massive mistake that I guess happened both of the last two plays, and they did not correct. I just can't fathom what on earth went into that paralysis, I guess, on the sideline and not wanting to take a penalty when the ball's on the one-yard line. Guess how much that moves the ball? 18 inches.
Yeah. All right, let's get to that in a sec. Let's go over this, what Lou Holtz said, okay? Lou Holtz goes on the Pat McAfee show. Just recipe for probably Notre Dame wants to keep Lou Holtz off the Pat McAfee show the day before the game. But I coached, this is Lou Holtz. I coached under Woody Hayes at Ohio State. We won a national championship when I was there. I'm proud of that. However, he's saying about Ryan Day, he has lost to Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Michigan twice, and everyone that beats him does so because they're more physical than Ohio State, and I think Notre Dame will take the same approach. Later, he says, forget who the hell we're playing. Just tell Ohio State this. You tell them they better bring their lunch because it's going to be a full day's work. It literally was all 60 minutes, or 59-59. He was right about that part.
The old lunch pail.
The lunch pail kind of thing. Ryan Day then comes off the top. I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. Probably, hopefully in bed.
In bed, yeah.
What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio. It's always been Ohio against the world. And it will continue to be Ohio against the world. I tell you what, I love those kids where you got a tough team. They do have a tough team. Okay, you're tough if you play at Ohio State. All right, but a little overreaction there, Ryan. I mean, you won a great game, but I've heard better trash talk than everybody that beats them does so because they're more physical than Ohio State. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think Clemson maybe beat them one of those times because they had ETN and Trevor Lawrence and stuff, but whatever. It's Lou Holtz. Anyway, so Ross, a little bit much, a little sensitive there by the Ohio State coach.
A couple things stick out here. First of all, this clearly was like pent up frustration from probably a year, 2 years, right? Of, you know, we've talked about it on the show before, right? He has a lot of pressure on him, maybe more pressure than
any coach
has ever had with a 49-6 record, overall record. And I think you saw that frustration come out in that last 2 years with losses to Michigan, in 4.5 years, not winning a national championship, which is weird to say. I mean, they finish in the top five every year. It's crazy. So I think it's just frustration from him that was kind of pent up and just kind of, woo, was released. A second thing sticks out to me. The younger coaches in college football, and Ryan Day is 44. Do you remember, you guys remember, especially when you were young bucks covering the sport, that coaches would always say, oh, I don't read the papers. You know, I don't read the papers. I don't read the paper. I don't read the papers. No, we don't care about the outside of the papers. But now, you do occasionally, you know, hear coaches say, oh, I don't read social media. I don't look at social media. I don't. Here's the thing. They look at social media. They read social media. And they listen. So back in the day, maybe they probably read, even though they said they didn't read. Today, they listen or they hear and they read social media, you know. And it's pretty clear that's become a thing. And some coaches just kind of like buy into it and acknowledge that they do. And pretty clearly, you know, Ryan Day heard what happened. And Jake Dickert, the Washington State coach, you know, again, like
he didn't even hear right.
Yeah, no, like, he didn't hear correctly. He didn't hear Lee Corso correctly. But like they're watching and they're listening and they're reading. And it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, and then social media gets it right in front of them because it gets spread around and all of that. All right, let's get to this final drive and the 10 men on the field. this was absolutely wild. They get down to the 1 yard line. They've got a shot at two plays. They run a pass play. There's a timeout. Then they run a pass play. Then they run. First off, the possession before, I don't know why Notre Dame's passing the ball. It gives Ohio That's State.
Terrible. Terrible.
Gives Ohio. I mean, Notre Dame had this thing. They had it. Yep. They had it. Mm. And they've lost six straight to Ohio State. Everybody loses Ohio State pretty much. Like, there's just only so many opportunities to have that night. And they had the game won. Their defense played so well. Sam Hartman was good enough. The offense was good enough. They're sitting there with that lead, and they 14-10, and they give them too much time. They get the ball back. They get these two first downs too quickly. That didn't help. They would have been better off gaining 9 yards and then plunging over. Like, everything went bad at the end. Ohio State gets the ball to get down to the end, and Notre Dame has two men on the field for the final two plays. The first one is a pass breakup. And then the second one, of course, is the plunge over the goal line with 1 second. Now, I was watching with some other people, and we couldn't, needless to say, we did not assume, we didn't count players, because why would you ever think there's only 10 people on the field? But you, especially like when there had been no deal, I don't know if Ohio State knew, and that's why they didn't sub, because then Notre Dame could have subbed. I'd like to know that. But we looked at that defensive formation, like, they're going to run it right there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, yeah. There's no defensive tackle.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like, if he throws another pass, he should get fired. Like, I don't care if you're 49-6. If you throw another pass when there's that gap right there, and we're like, why are those two? Wait, there's two guys. We didn't think it was 10 guys.
Yeah.
All-time coaching gaffe.
Egregious.
I'm sorry. Egregious. Marcus Freeman may be a likable guy. That is just 10 for two plays. And then he says, we knew about it. We didn't want to take a penalty. Mm. Now, they love analytics, but there can't be an analytic that says you're more likely to stop from the one with 10 guys than the half-yard line with 11. That there can't be enough scenarios, because I was waiting for one of these. Well, I was like, that's a stupid play. I'm waiting for
the numbers say we ran this, computed it 18,000 times.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. You want 11 guys. Take the penalty and get short yardage defense. I don't understand the explanation. I don't understand how the failure happens. I don't understand any of it, Pat.
No. And the other thing, like, and this was where, again, like, I think Ryan Day was a little excessive in the celebration of his team's toughness. They barely got that yard against 10 guys running right over the absent player.
About three or 4 inches. Chip,
the Holy Ghost. Yeah, Chip, if they had stopped them, that would have been gone down in Notre Dame lore. The Holy Ghost.
The Holy Ghost. But somebody tweeted, they put it in the Lord's hands.
Yeah.
They put it in the Lord's hands.
Well, the Lord's not big enough to be a run stopper, I'm afraid.
No, the Holy Ghost, that turned out to be a 303-pound nose guard. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what.
It was like you said, it was a great game. It was so fiercely contested, great atmosphere. And then it was just kind of this cacophony of what the hell's going on? What are they doing? Why did they do that? Why didn't they do that? And then what did Ryan Day say? Like, everything just blew up at the very end.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Unbelievable game. Huge victory for Ohio State as they carry on. Certainly leads them into the likelihood they're unbeaten when they play Penn State.
Yep.
Who looked very, very good at beating Iowa. We'll get to that a little bit later. And keeps everything alive. And for Notre Dame, it's another close, but no. And I'll tell you, if they had beaten that, they'd beaten Ohio State. They had a real playoff chance. They're going to get USC later this year. Clemson looks beatable. I mean, it just was an unbelievably blown opportunity for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Just an unbelievable blown opportunity on their big, big week.
Yeah. Self-inflicted, really. I mean, don't give Ohio State credit for battling, but the way Notre Dame finished that game was just a disaster.
Always look at it like these teams are at the top of college football, the top maybe 15 to 25 programs, powerhouse programs. They're so even talent-wise that these little decisions, like late in games, often are the difference in, man, like this was just a perfect example of that. Maybe we get later this week more of an answer from Marcus Freeman about like how this happened, not only once but twice. It's just I'm
what happened once. He just didn't care. He just didn't. Yeah. Like the fact that he knew was bad, I could not believe.
Yeah.
Just take the penalty, run out in the field, get a 15-yarder. Exactly. Who cares?
Exactly. And that's where, it's like, all right, it would be a bad mistake, but it would be, okay, fog of war. We screwed up, heat of the moment. But to know you only have 10 guys out there and like, yeah, we're just going to roll with this.
It says right here. Yeah, we were trying to get a fourth D lineman on the field, and I told him to just stay off because we can't afford a penalty. I didn't have any timeouts, so we couldn't afford a penalty there.
Yes, you could.
It's on us. We've got to be better. Now, if you're on offense, you get the penalty. It's a 10-second runoff, right?
Yeah.
But that's not an issue. Like, is there something I'm not – there's nothing, right?
No. And that's where – okay, like the other thing, you mentioned the 10-second runoff. Ohio State used its last timeout to avoid a 10-second runoff that would have left it with 5 seconds on the clock. They only had that timeout because Notre Dame threw that screen pass and didn't force Ohio State to use another timeout.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be aggressive and, you know, play for the passing on the final down, whatever. I don't know. Tough loss for Notre Dame. We'll see where they go. They have a nice team. That was as good of a Notre Dame performance as I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, they lost, but like even they beat Clemson a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm. They beat them last year, but then the one where DJ Uiagalelei played, that was they balled out that game, but Trevor Lawrence was out with COVID.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
A couple years ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Defensively, that it was impressive to do what they did. I don't know if Ohio State should be concerned defensively or offensively. Another kind of issue there, or is it just Notre Dame's defense is really good? I don't know. I guess we're gonna find out a lot more this weekend too, because Notre Dame plays at Duke undefeated and playing really well.
Big game there. Game day, I think, is going to Duke for the first time ever. Wow. That'll be a scene. So yeah, no, Notre Dame's got a chance to bounce back, but they're gonna have to bounce back and get it done. And look, say this for Ryan Day, he talks about a tough team. Part of being tough is being mentally tough, and his program was mentally tougher, if only the coaching staff, for not gaffing. Like, if you gaff away the end of the game, well, that's how these things go. Notre Dame also had like a fourth down that they thought was converted, called back, a field goal. I thought they were
This was a game
where points were at a premium. Man, you should have kicked another field goal early. They had opportunities. It just wasn't there.
Both sides missed 2 fourth-and-ones.
Yeah.
And that was another area where, like if Ohio State didn't get that last yard, Ryan Day was going to get barbecued.
Oh, yeah.
Because the one before that, they run a jet sweep. We're a tough team, but we're going to run a jet sweep with a receiver into the boundary. And then the other one, 4th-and-1 of the goal line, you know, was, which a lot of people run this play, but the play action rollout throw to the tight end, and they covered it, and that was that. So there was not, they were not going to pound the ball straight at Notre Dame then.
Yeah. All right. Florida State, huge win. They go to Death Valley. They get the victory over Clemson, 31-24 in overtime. Game switched on when Jalen Deloach strips Cade Klubnik of the ball. They picked it up. They scored. I thought Clemson was going to win the game until then. End of the game for Clemson. Offensively was a disaster. Bad play calling. Not aggressive at the very end of regulation. All around mess. Keon Coleman. Holy cow, what a player. What a game he had. Jordan Travis played really well. Seminoles 4-0 and have now beaten LSU on a neutral field. And Clemson at Clemson. There's a possibility they face again, although probably not. Clemson's got 2 league losses. So thoughts overall on this one, Ross?
Yeah, they've got you just said it there. They probably got the best 2 wins in the country. you know, LSU in a neutral field and in winning at Clemson. That's why I put them number one in our poll this week. I think they have the best two wins in the nation as far as combo. I kind of thought the same. I about midway through the third quarter, I thought, you know, Clemson's gonna do this thing and we're gonna have Dabo prevail again and beat Florida State. It's gonna be the same old story, and the scoop and score kind of changed things. And late in the game, obviously, yeah, Keon Coleman just pretty remarkable. You know, I think we talked about it after the LSU game. Spent some time with his family, like after that game when he kind of blew up. And isn't it fitting, Keon Coleman, a transfer, right? Is kind of the difference late in that game against a team that doesn't have any transfers, basically. So
backup QB,
you know, yeah,
and a kicker, yep, coming off a Zoom class or something.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, off the street, basically. Who missed? Yeah, yeah, that's a
missed
whole
the field goal.
Jonathan Whites, missed the field goal that would have basically, you know, won the game.
Yeah,
yeah, missed a 29 yarder. Ouch. Yeah, I have to say, I did not get to see a lot of this game because I arrived at the Notre Dame tailgate scene. I had a friend who was there.
Oh, boy.
And, no. Nobody sloshed at Notre Dame watches other games. Huh? Nobody. There's like nobody has any games on TV.
What are they
They're
doing?
All just standing around drinking. like looking around like, this is not Tuscaloosa, clearly. Where are the TVs? I'm like going around asking people. You know, it was the other thing. Cell service, disaster. Couldn't even get a score. I'm like walking around asking, hey, who won Florida State Clemson? I didn't know for like a half an hour.
Wait, wow. So they don't put TVs up like off the side of the RVs or at the tail? Really?
I finally found two people that did, but neither of them had watched Florida State Clemson.
This is the most Notre Dame thing ever.
It is.
All we care about is ourselves.
Yeah, they're focused on the beauty of the campus,
man. They're independence.
Stay focused on the task at
hand.
Stay
focused on the trees and the grass and the buildings. Touchdown Jesus, you know.
I was like, what?
I've got time for all these other games. Get out of here. There are other games, other teams? What?
Well, it was a total coaching disaster at the end of the game, I thought. This was a poorly managed end of the game by Clemson. Great win, though, by Florida State. And Clemson now has to go play Syracuse, as you mentioned on the last pod, that's now 4-0. So we got that.
Clemson could have, they got some more hits potentially coming, right? The Syracuse later in the season, they got to play at Miami. I mean, this
Notre Dame
get interesting. Yep. Yeah, Notre Dame, of course. Yeah,
yeah, it's going to get real interesting. All right, speaking of interesting, Coach Prime got, as he called it, a good old fashioned butt kicking. It sure was. We all felt that the defense was going to get slaughtered, and they did. You can't give Bo Nix all day to pass. I thought they'd score some points, though, and they certainly was not. Ross, you were there. We had Dan Lanning. They released their locker room speech where Dan Lanning is saying they're playing for clicks. Mm. We're playing for victory wins. He goes after him. Now, he never has to face Prime again unless it's in a playoff someday or something. Like the league is busting up, so they don't mind doing that. Coach Prime just loves Dan Lanning. I don't know if he knows his name, but he keeps saying the coach over there does a great job. Okay. What was the scene? What was the scene? And B, didn't you have to, speaking of pregame calamities, didn't you have to take a public bus?
Yeah.
You had to take two city buses to get to the game?
Dan, I got the full Pacific Northwest kind of experience. So the Uber situation in Eugene is not great. In about 3 hours, I was staying about 3 miles from the stadium, and about 3 hours before kickoff, I started to request Ubers. 30 minutes later, right, no Ubers. So I said, you know, I'm going to just have to hike it. So I hiked a mile to the bus stop where I bought a ticket, got on the bus, didn't smell great. The smell on the bus was a combination, I would say, of the poo-poo underwear and in a little BO. So that was a fun 20-minute ride into downtown Eugene. Then from there, I had to make a change at the Eugene station, bus station. I had to get on a second bus where the driver proceeded to tell me when I asked, how close are you going to get to the stadium? She said, not close. I got on that bus where the driver midway through the ride yelled at a person who saying some things, some slurs on the bus, and she threatened to escort the man off the bus. She dropped me off anyway, as close as she could to the stadium. It was another about a mile walk to the stadium. So two bus rides, 2 miles of walking, a lot of interesting smells later. I showed up about 50 minutes before kickoff. There you go.
That's the dedication you get at Yahoo Sports.
Sports.yahoo.com.
I watched just an absolute bloodbath from the very start. I thought Colorado would score on them too. And that was probably the most impressive thing was Oregon's defensive front.
Yeah.
Oregon's cover, the way they covered too. It was really, really impressive. Just an absolute beating. And of course, you know, Deion Sanders walks in the post game and nobody had to tell him what Dan Lanning said. He already knew. I mean, the game's 10 minutes over, right? He already knew. He had gotten messages about it. And so he addressed it. I give him credit. He, you know, he was pretty honest about stuff and he wanted to keep talking. He wanted to keep taking questions. The SID about, you know, 10 minutes in wanted to stop the news conference, said last question. Deion said, no, just keep them coming. I ain't got nowhere to be. So we kept him coming and he talked as he does. So that was entertaining. But man, the Oregon, that was my first time in Eugene, and it was impressive. Just the atmosphere and the stadium and the fans and you know, it was loud and their team played just incredibly well.
It's Oregon. Yeah, go ahead.
This was the, you know, for lack of a better term, I think the come of it's Colorado had coming. As you said, Dan, we kind of thought this would happen. I agree that the fact that their offense could do nothing was pretty surprising. But when you can't run the ball at all, you're setting yourself up. You're setting your quarterback up to get just mauled. And Shador Sanders had 73 yards in sacks. So they're just so one-dimensional offensively, and they're not very good defensively. And this is who they are. And, you know, yeah, there was a predictable amount of sack dancing out there from some people. You know, then that's fine. Look, Deion didn't sit there and say, you know, make any excuses, right? He said they had it coming. Now, he did say, what, better get me this year? This is going to be the worst team I've had?
Ooh, yeah. Okay. Gonna be the worst that's gonna be the worst one. He said, "Better get me now."
Mm-hmm. He will improve the lines. It's hard to turn it. There's definitely. I think people are tired. You know, there's so much talk about him. I don't really watch ESPN, everyone's like, all they talk about all day long is Deion Sanders, and that's probably the case. I mean, I watch some ESPN, but the way they talk about the Cowboys or whatever, LeBron James, But I hadn't seen that. But I think if I was a heavy ESPN watcher this week, I would have been probably tired of it too, as it just kind of goes over the top on everything. But yeah, this was pretty much predicted, except the offense couldn't get anything going. So now they got USC. Doesn't get any easier. Only gets tougher. Mm-hmm. This Pac-12 race, though, is going to be Oregon, Washington, USC all look fantastic. So doesn't Utah. They're 4-0 without Cam Rising.
Yeah.
They had no problem beating, not really much of a problem beating UCLA. Their defense totally shut down Dante Moore. And Washington State won that game. We'll get to that in a sec. So this Pac-12 race is going to be incredible going forward. All eyes out west still on all of that. We'll see. Coach Prime all week going in, if you watched his channels, I don't know what's getting said. And he certainly did a million interviews. He's like, we're not good. You know, we're not playing well. It's standard. It's embarrassing. We can't be putting it out there. And boy, I can't wait to see what he's got this week on his chatter. All right. We will be back right after this. All right, the Washington State defeats Oregon State 38-35. Wild fun game. Oregon State storm back from 35-14 deficit to try to win it. Couldn't quite make it. Cam Ward was really good. 404 yards, 4 touchdowns for Wazoo. They win. They stay perfect. They've now defeated Oregon State and Wisconsin. They're looking pretty good. This was one of the other beefs of the thing. Coach Jake Dickert gets into it with Lee Corso by saying he claimed that he was watching game day and he heard Lee Corso say this is the No One Watches Bowl. Now we know Lee, Coach Corso there is up in age and has got some health issues. He actually apparently called it the Nobody Wants Us Bowl.
Which makes more sense
because nobody wants us. Not no one watches. It wouldn't make any sense really to promote a game and say no one's going to watch the game. It wouldn't have made sense. That makes sense. So I believe that's what Corso actually said. Nobody wants this bowl, but he's all fired up about that. Then all of a sudden he's got Herbstreit coming back and Ryan Leaf is jumping in. Everyone's and at the end of the day, I mean, they're all yelling at each other. And Washington State's pissed because ESPN basically blew up their league. And that's partially true, but it's also partially
true. Kind of got the wrong network.
Yeah, right? Well, there's a lot of things Jake Dickert got wrong there.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean, ESPN played a part, but not as big a part as FOX.
Yeah.
Fox played a bigger part. And then, really, George Kliakoff didn't, you know, gave ESPN this absurd number that they wanted in money. And that's why ESPN just said, forget it. They walk away from the deal. So there's a lot going on here. Everyone's up in their feelings. Pat, do you care? I just like the sniping. I don't know. What?
Well, again, like,
I'm confused.
You're going after 88-year-old Lee Corso? This is as crazy as going after 86-year-old Lou Holtz. Like, you can't let that slide, especially when you get it wrong. If you want to make a list, look, you want a school that's got some grievances? A Washington State has them, and Oregon State. They've got some legit grievances. If you want to set up your enemy's table, Lee Corso isn't at the table, man. You got a lot of other people that should be ahead of him on the I got a beef with you list. So going after Lee Corso here is like, oh my gosh. Look, Jake Dickert has done a hell of a job coaching that program. He has done great. He stepped into a adverse situation when Nick Rolovich was basically thrown out of the job back during the pandemic, and he's done really well there. And I think he's doing a great job keeping this team and that program rallied. And they're going to be fun to watch the rest of the season. But this was not the fight to pick.
Yeah, another young coach, right? Dickert is 40 years old. And, you know, it's no longer that we don't read it, we don't see it type of thing. I think he readily admitted that he was watching game day when it came on. And, yeah, he appeared to mishear exactly what was said. But and he also went after I guess the way ESPN provides Lee Corso with notes.
Gosh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And he went down that lane as well, and then of course went down the you know the network destroyed our league sort of thing, and it was really something. The new generation of coaches out here swinging.
Ain't no backing down. Ain't no backing down. It really is. I don't know. Yeah.
Coach speak is dead.
It is
the
a good
coach
point.
Coach speak is to air the grievances.
Meanwhile, Cam Ward, just unbelievable. Like 404 yards. He misfired on just 6 throws, 4 touchdowns. My goodness. Incredible. I think he's thrown for, he's averaging, you know, right at like around 350 a game. He's got 0 interceptions on the season in about 15, 14 touchdowns. Incredible.
He came in from Incarnate Word, an FCS transfer last year. Kind of took a while to get his feet under him, but now this year two, boom, he's blowing up.
Yeah, the quarterbacking out there is incredible. There's no question about that. All right, I wanted to get to this one. Texas A&M and Auburn. We talked about this as a desperation bowl game for A&M. They responded nicely. 27-10 victory. The Auburn, they had a quarterback injury. They still moved the ball. The defense was fantastic. I watched a bunch of this game. It absolutely shut Auburn down. Auburn's touchdown was a 60-yard scoop and score where Jimbo Fisher was somehow on the field. it was kind of
Jimbo
funny.
Squared it they up.
Ran, yeah, I know. Jimbo could have hit him. Good thing he didn't. They had three different quarterbacks for Auburn give this thing a shot. They combined to go 9 of 23 for 56 yards. Mm. Walter Nolan, Chris Russell Jr., Torin York, all these guys were just crushing. This defense was really good against Auburn. So credit where credit is due for A&M. They needed a win desperately, and they got it. That's a good solid win to get something going. Because, man, Kyle Field, they were showing those stands, and they're doing their best to, like, show the fan, like, it's packed. Like, they built that place so big.
Yeah.
And those, like, only really Penn State, to me, comparison, like, a stadium that big, that far from a population center. Like, it's a lot right. easier to get 100,000 to Ann Arbor, Michigan, which sits just on the outskirts of Detroit, or Columbus, Ohio, which is its own, more than a million person city. Like, man, it's clear that Aggie Nation isn't 100% sold on this team. So I don't know if you saw any of that, Pat. Probably not, because you were drinking with the Notre Dame fans.
I drank nothing. I had water. That is it. But no, I didn't see any of that one as well. I was monitoring scores.
Anybody?
Well, yeah, I watched a little bit of it. Auburn can do anything offensively. It was just the first half of that game was brutal. It was quite sad. It was 6-3 at halftime. Three field goals in the first half. But it's rare, and this is probably a stat I could have looked up. Maybe somebody already has at some point, maybe an Auburn beat writer. But I don't know that a Hugh Freeze coached team has ever been held to 200 or fewer offensive yards in a game. You know, I mean, they usually move the ball no matter where he's been, no matter who they're playing. And 200 yards. Wow. I think a local, I want to say a beat writer for A&M last week or 2 weeks ago after A&M lost to Miami wrote a story with actually really fascinating figures about DJ Durkin as a defensive coordinator and a coach, and how his defenses haven't played well in big games. And he had these incredible numbers that backed it up, really. But boy, they played well on Saturday, and there's some winnable games ahead where they could get on a roll for sure.
Yeah. They got talent on that defense. A lot of those five stars they signed.
Alabama responds.
Lord save
it. We all thought Ole Miss might have had the better team. No, they did not. Defense came to play. They ran the ball. Ole Miss just wasn't an inspiring effort. They played them tough in the beginning, but Jackson Dart, 20 of 35 for 244. They weren't able to run the ball. They weren't really able to get anything going. Jalen Milroe, very solid, 17 to 21, 225 yards. He had a TD, had a pick, got sacked a bunch, but didn't make too many big issues. And they just sort of ground that thing out, 24-10. I'm reminded that the single adage of gambling or making race to the case picks, don't pick against Alabama. Mm-hmm. And why did someone not help me last week with that horrendous idea? That Ole Miss was better. This is just—I don't know. This was a disappointing performance by Lane Kiffin's program,
especially the trolling going in.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Talk smack all week. Yep. Castle's talk crumbling. I think not.
No.
Pat, did you see any of this? See, Pat's got the greatest excuse.
Yes. Like,
I was. There's no TV. Drinking Notre Dame, blaming on the Notre Dame fans. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great work by you this week. Go ahead. Did you see any of this one?
I saw a lot of this game, yes. Okay, and I saw Mississippi look like they got tired of blocking and tackling. It looked a bit like a Lane Kiffin team. I'm sorry, a little too finesse, a little too cute, this, that, and not enough meat and potatoes. And you got to have some meat and potatoes when you're playing against Alabama. But good for Jalen Milroe bouncing back, you know, and playing well, and, you know, getting back the starting job after the strangest benching of all time. And then, you know, hitting some big plays and having a couple of nice runs, too. So Alabama, I'm still not convinced they're good, but they averted disaster.
Yeah, the Alabama offense didn't do anything on Saturday to make me think that they're a CFP type, SEC championship type team. But in Jalen Milroe, it's funny because his numbers, you look at his numbers, they're great, right? 17 to 21, 225, touchdown, interception. But he took four sacks. And you know, I mean, some of that's probably on the line as well. But he did make, there was a few poor decisions in there. But they obviously pushed through and got it done. I mean, I think Alabama was on the, they got a turnover and they were at the one, you know, and they went backwards. So offensively, it's still a struggle. And maybe this is the Alabama team of old where they're going to have to rely on their defense. They have to win games like this, 24 to 10, you know, 21 to 7, 17-14. I mean, it might be turning back the clock a little bit for Alabama. They can't sling it around and put up the points. So, you know, you gotta play ball control offense and kind of lean on the defense. I was so fascinated with the quotes after this game from the Ole Miss side, from Lane Kiffin and from Jackson Dart, the quarterback. Jackson Dart basically just came out and said, look, this was the year for us to beat them. We thought they were vulnerable, and this was the year. And his coach was acting like that all week, right? I mean, they thought they were a better team. Lord Saban, the Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it's true. Penn State. Look, we can make all the jokes you want about Iowa, but the Penn State defense was fantastic on Saturday night, and I remain super intrigued by this team. They win 31 to zip against Iowa. Let's forget it's Iowa. Get to the they got no points.
Forget so
the Brian,
it's Iowa.
Just these numbers are incredible. we'll just do this. The Brian Ferentz contract. He's got to score 320. They need 325 points this year. Iowa needs to score. They need at least seven victories. So if you have seven, you get to a bowl. Supposedly his contract will end. If not, they'll probably give him a new one. Who knows? But right now with the Ofer, he has 85 on the year. They're averaging 21.25 points a game. He needs 25.0. So the rest of the year, they need at least 26.67. They're behind schedule now.
Behind the chains.
Behind the chains, and that's the deal. These numbers, horrific. No points. Can't do worse than that. Four first downs.
Oh.
Four first downs. Beautifully, they have four first downs. They never once went for it on fourth down.
Of course not.
I mean, you're losing 31 zip. Maybe go for it on fourth. Nope. 76 total yards. Four turnovers. Yards per rush. 1.2. They had the ball for 14 minutes and 33 seconds in the game.
That's incomprehensible. Didn't they run 33 plays? That's just amazing. How do you only run 33 plays an entire football game?
I don't know. They did pin a punt down in the Penn State inside the five. I mean, they had 17 rushing attempts. It's 17 rushing attempts for 20 yards, and they attempted 16 passes. So does that mean 33. That's it.
33 incredible plays. Not in a high school game, high school freshman game,
yeah,
but in a college game.
Yeah.
35. That is the amount of points through four games that Penn State has allowed. Manny Diaz's defense locking it down.
That's my point. Yeah. I know it's Iowa, okay? I know they're offensively bad, but like this was just utter domination.
Yep.
Right? And Penn State is for real. Are they going to be able to prove it? Look, next they're 4-0. They're at Northwestern. They got a week off and the mighty UMass Minutemen show up after that. And then no offense to Northwestern and UMass, but we're 6-0 going into Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like, this is good. He might have something. This is a pretty good football team. Yeah, it's Iowa, but how could you dominate a team more? Put it that way.
Right. I'll tell you this. Penn State, 215 rushing yards, the most against Iowa in 4 years. So they controlled the clock. They pounded the ball on them. And I think that's a good formula against Ohio State.
Yeah, really good formula. So we are there with that. It's time to move on to our most innovative play of the weekend, courtesy of Invesco QQQ. Pat, which team was leading the way this Saturday?
I'm going to go with Oregon, the Ducks there. In addition to just mauling the heck out of Colorado straight up, they threw a little trickeration at the Buffaloes. They're up 13-0 fairly early on, backed up deep in their own territory. And Dan Lanning dials up a fake punt, but not just a, you know, garden variety fake punt, but a snap to the up back who happens to be a 300-pound defensive lineman, Casey Rogers, who then bolts 20 yards over the left tackle, wide open, caught Colorado completely unaware. First down, kept the route going there. And I love the quote from Casey Rogers, who has all the hair you would want in a defensive lineman, right? I mean, he's got down to, you know, shoulders and beyond, big curly mane. And he said, I was at the pre-classic a couple of weeks ago. That's the big track meet in at Oregon. Steve Prefontaine was the great runner from Oregon there. He said, I was at the pre-classic, and I got some tips on how to run. Big man can run sometimes. So kudos to Oregon for the fake punt. Kudos to Casey Rogers for showing his wheels. 300-pounder gaining 20 yards. Nice play.
You watch that play, Ross?
Yeah. I remember you try not to like exclaim in the press box, but as the play unfolded, I was like, fake in the press box. You know, I was like, oops, sorry.
Probably not hearing it. Yeah. It's just natural. Yeah. Oh, Prime said that got the thing going and they never looked back. They never recovered. So pretty good. There you have it. That was our innovative play of the weekend. Thanks again to Invesco QQQ. All right. We've said, plenty of mean things on this podcast. This is the time when we try to get to our gentler side, our softer side. Can we say something nice? Is anyone prepared at this moment to say something nice? You got to look something nice up.
I'm looking it up because nice does not come naturally.
Ross, can you say something? Nobody can say anything nice. I can start. I'm nice.
Start us off.
I'm nice. I want to say something nice about Marshall. Marshall football.
There you go.
I understand that Virginia Tech is not good. They have, this is a bad Virginia Tech team. Still, I don't care. Virginia Tech came to Huntington, West Virginia on Saturday to play. It was an incredible scene there. They went Edwards Stadium, I think seats like 30,000. They had an announced crowd of 31,475. I don't know where they stuffed all these Huntingtonites in, but they did. They've had bigger crowds in the past, but they've kind of refigured the thing. They jammed everyone in. It was a beautiful day. They beat a Power 5 opponent, a team that's just over the mountains, a kind of historic neighborhood team. Marshall's just such a proud program. Obviously, they had the plane crash back in the day. It's a historic program of all the different things. They're also a really good team. Charles Huff is an excellent football coach. He's a former Nick Saban assistant, and they have just rolled along with him. They beat Notre Dame last year, which is great, but it's on the road. But when you can get a chance to build and get a home victory and set that great little River City on up and everyone party and everyone excited, that's a great day for Marshall. They have now won 8 games in a row. Charles Huff should be a very, very hot coach for somebody looking. They went 9-4 last year. They haven't lost since they lost to Coastal Carolina. This is a really good football program, and he now has a Virginia Tech win, albeit against a lousy Virginia Tech, but who cares? He's making things happen down there at Marshall. So I am saying a great day for a great mid-major football program. It's one of those ones that they're not historic. They don't They're not going to be a top 10 team generally, but they care and they have fans. And, you know, it's just one of those great football programs. So good job, Marshall, on Saturday. See, that was nice. That was
nice. That was nice. So nice.
No, I've got snark, no secret meanings. Straight up. Coach Huff, good job, buddy.
I've got a straight up nice too. And it goes to another coach, David Braun. Northwestern interim coach. I don't know that anybody thought that Northwestern would win a game this year. And lo and behold, they beat Minnesota in an upset. Not just an upset, they were 12-point underdog, but they were down 21 points late in the third quarter. In the middle of the fourth quarter, about 9 minutes left in the game, ESPN's lovely probability that Pat just loves, the win probability, had the Gophers at 97% winning the game. No! The Wildcats scored two touchdowns the final 9 minutes or so, tied the game, went to overtime, and won the game in overtime on a 25-yard pass, reception, touchdown reception. So give it up. David Braun, former defensive coordinator, promoted to interim to replace Pat Fitzgerald after the allegations and things emerged over the summer. So incredible outing. And on the flip side, to throw a not something nice in there, boy, Minnesota.
I mean, that is a program, too, that's just built to grind out wins. You get a 21-point lead, that game should be over. Mm-hmm. So, all right, I'm going to say something nice about Kyle McCord, the Ohio State quarterback, because that guy has been under not as much pressure as Ryan Day, but a lot. He's coming in after C.J. Stroud, coming in after Justin Fields, coming in after Dwayne Haskins, coming in after J.T. Barrett, this incredible lineage of quarterbacks. He didn't get the job till late. Most everyone doubted him. His numbers through the first few games have been pretty good, but nothing spectacular. Everybody went in Notre Dame's like, oh, boy, this is going to be a big test for him. Is he up to it? Well, he was good enough, and he was incredibly poised and calm and clutch on that last drive. 65 yards with the game on the line, third and 10, finds a guy open for a big gain to keep the drive going. Fourth and 7, game on the line, hits Julian Fleming, keeps the drive going. And then third and 19, and I will say something not very nice and say, Notre Dame, why were you playing such a soft zone? But still, recognize where the play was. Yeah.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah. Recognized where the hole was. Emeka Egbuka sits in it, and he hits him with a strike to get it to the one-yard line to set up the heroics at the end. McCord afterwards, like, just so calm and stoic still. It's like you can see why that part of him that Ryan Day likes is he's just not the kind of guy that's going to be prone to wild swings of emotion. And he got it done when he had to. Hasn't thrown an interception since his first game of this season against Indiana. Three straight games without one. And a huge, huge W, one of the biggest wins in Ohio State history, frankly.
How about that? All right. Oh, you know, we usually do the small sample Heisman before to say something nice, don't we? Yeah. I did it backwards this year. Yeah. What are the rules? Let's give out some Heismans now. I don't know what I was doing. I only forget the order of the show. Good hosting. Anyway, usually they hand out the Heisman at the end of the year. We like to give it every week. Small sample Heisman is what we call it. Anyone got a small? Anyone come prepared for small sample Heisman?
I do actually. Have
all right, all right. This happened after the drinking with Notre Dame fans. Good. Good.
I'm being completely slandered here. Defamation. I'm
Ross had to ride two buses just to get to a game, and
two
you're
miles,
sitting around
walk, two buses,
walk 2 miles uphill, no doubt.
Yeah.
And you are just. And let me just say this: when a representative of the College Football Inquirer podcast shows up in your town, I want the mayor to arrange like a chariot to carry one of us to make sure we're at the game. This is the College Football Inquirer. What are we doing, Eugene? What are we doing? At least give him a free bus pass or something.
We do deserve at least that much.
Yeah, right? I mean, come this on. Is big. This is big. All right, go ahead.
Rome Odunze, receiver, Washington Huskies. I mean, if you haven't seen these guys play, they are spectacular. Mm. They are fun. They are electric. They are a big play machine, and he's the biggest play guy they got. Five catches, 125 yards, two touchdowns as they blew out California, but also an 83-yard punt return touchdown against the Golden Bears. So that's six touches over 200 yards from him and three TDs. He has had a very good career at Washington. But this season, I think he's at his best level yet, and I will be shocked if he's not a first-team All-American when all is done. As of now, small sample Heisman.
Good choice. Good choice. Ross?
So I'm going to go back to the game we just talked about with Northwestern and in Minnesota and David Braun. I said something nice about David Braun. But what I failed to mention is there is a small sample Heisman performance in that game. Northwestern receiver Bryce Kurtz, who to this point I had not heard of, 10 catches, 215 yards, two touchdowns, including an 80-yard bomb. Without that, obviously, they don't win that game. Bryce, by the way, a senior from Indiana, impressive numbers. I think it was by far his career high. As I scan his game logs, most of them are 15 yards, 40 yards, 50 yards, and then 215 yards against the Gophers.
Love it.
Not bad. All right. I am giving my small sample Heisman to, in a losing performance, Cameron Scataboo. Mm. He is a 5'10", 225-pound running back at Arizona State. He transferred in from Sacramento State. And this is not college football's greatest athlete, or maybe he is. You want a day? 20 carries. They're playing USC. They lose, but whatever. He gets 20 carries for 111 yards and a touchdown. He has four catches for 79 yards and a touchdown, including an incredible 52-yard touchdown where he lowers a shoulder and breaks a tackle and runs all the way in. He also lines up at quarterback and goes 2-for-3 passing for 42 yards. And then one time punts a 53-yard punt that got down inside the 20. Cameron Scataboo did it all for Arizona State. Travis Hunter, this guy's playing four positions.
Impressive.
It's all on offensive punting. That's a small sample Heisman if I ever heard of one. USC had their way with Arizona State, which is struggling mightily, 42-28. I want to see. I hope Travis Hunter returns in time to match up with Cam Scataboo.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We can find out the thing. I mean, try passing and punting and running and catching. Good job, Cam. So that's what we got. All right. Heck of a weekend. We couldn't even get to all the stuff, but that's how it is. We will get more to it, more fallout this week. We'll have a show on Tuesday night. It'll probably be out. Definitely be up Wednesday morning, and then we'll have Race to the Case later. Lot happening. It's angry out there, folks. It's angry on these college football streets. There's bitterness. There's old school people mad at new school. It's tough. A lot of bitterness.
Dan.
Yeah.
Where is Lou Holtz? We have to find the answer.
And remember, it's always Ohio versus the world.
Always has been.
And really? The world goes, really? Where the hell's Ohio? Right?
Yeah. I mean,
some guy.
How many people do you encounter other than like in Michigan who are like, man, Michigan. I want to get Ohio.
Yeah. Michigan hates Ohio. Nobody else. I don't know. It's Ohio versus the world. Look out, though. I mean, you know, they had LeBron. They could bring back Jack Nicklaus. They got all these other guys. There's a lot of great. Travis Kelce. Did we mention Travis?
Don't
bring the Swifties in here.
It's too much. It's too much. That's going to be like wall-to-wall breakdown. Can't wait for the Stephen A. Smith breakdown of this situation. Anyway, we're appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about the show, and we will be back later. Talk to you later.